Hello, Akita. This is Dateline Pacific from RNZ Pacific. I'm Don Wiseman, and in today's program, New Zealand's Pacific communities want more climate change action for the atoll nations. A 15-year-old Fijian girl is heading to New York with a message for the UN Climate Summit. The Pohiva funeral is one of the biggest ever seen in Tonga. Solomon Islands province is surveying its appetite for independence ahead of the China switch. And in sport, a family first for the Kurundranis at the Rugby World Cup. Pacific communities in New Zealand say more attention needs to be given to the countries most vulnerable to the climate crisis. And as Kiribati, Tuvalu and Tokelau battle rising tides, its youth are bringing attention to the plight. Mackenzie Smith reports.
While Australia has been slammed in the Pacific over its climate change inaction, New Zealand has largely been praised. If nothing else, a full endorsement of climate agreements at July's Pacific Islands Forum in Tuvalu earned it the respect of Pacific leaders. But not everyone's convinced enough has been done to tackle the climate crisis where it hits the hardest. Atoll nations. A youth advisor for the Kiribati community in Auckland, Rubina Tekenene, is worried for her people.
Sometimes I feel sad because that's where our roots come from, you know. So maybe one day that's not going to hear Kiribati anymore, you know, because it's disappeared.
Ms. Tekenene says there should be more priority given to resettling those displaced by rising sea levels. According to the International Labour Organization, as many as 350,000 people from Pacific atoll populations are at risk of displacement. Not everyone's ready to give up just yet. A former Tokelauan public servant, now living in Auckland, He Tō Puka, says New Zealand needs to step up its efforts on climate mitigation. He says his people are frustrated.
The issue is it's a lot more about policy being driven from the government, whether it's actually, does it meet the needs and the concerns of the people on the ground.
A 3-metre seawall is all that protects Tokelau's three remote atolls. It recently secured New Zealand Foreign Ministry support in mitigating coastal hazards. Still, Auckland University Associate Professor Damon Salesa says New Zealand's response needs to be domestic as well.
It's just much more complex than just sending some money up to Tokelau to build something.
Others tend to agree. Next week, a student-led climate strike in Auckland will rally Pacifica activists in an event titled Our Islands Need You. Dr. Salesa says Pacific communities in New Zealand are leading a national conversation on climate change.
There's a clear signs that younger people are taking climate change a lot more seriously than perhaps some of the other generations.
That's the case for 24-year-old Tavita Nielsen-Mamea, a Tuvaluan playwright. He says growing up, he always knew Tuvalu would disappear under the waves, and his play Ko'au Tuvalu is showcasing just that in Christchurch.
In the Pacific, the climate is taking away a lot of their homes. When you're walking around in New Zealand, you kind of take note of that and take note of everyone's stories, because it's hard to see in everyday reality, but everyone is kind of going through something to do with climate change.
Tavita Nielsen-Mamea says New Zealand has an important role to play as a big brother in the Pacific. This is Mackenzie Smith.
Young people driving climate action around the world will get to showcase their solutions at the United Nations Climate Summit this weekend. Fijian student Anne-Marie Randuva will be in New York and says her generation is cleaning up a mess they did not create. The 15-year-old eco-champ says while her journey hasn't been easy, she hopes to return from New York more determined to lobby her Fijian government to review its Litter Act and classify balloon releasing as littering.
I am doing this for my generation and the other generations after me, and this is the platform I hope to make.
Why do you think it is important that young people need to take their messages from around the world to the UN?
I expect the UN, the world leaders and the representatives of the UN to hear our issues and our concerns about this climate change fight, because my island, my Pacific Island countries, will be the first to be underwater, and my people will become the first to be climate refugees.
Tell us about your journey in this climate change fight.
before my campaign, I started reading National Geographic magazines and watching documentaries, and this urge passion to be a protector and a guardian of the environment. We lived in Masese for a while, and we had access to the seawalls and also to the beaches. But it was also an eyesore because we saw a lot of plastic that are carelessly thrown by people and rubbish that are brought in by the tide. So my sister and I, my 12-year-old sister Faith, we picked up rubbish every school holidays, weekends, and even public holidays. Sometimes I get negative comments from my friends that, why are you picking up people's rubbish? And I tell them it's about civic pride, that people from overseas will not come to Fiji and pick up our own rubbish. It is our responsibility to keep Fiji clean.
When did you actually start to think about your environment? How old were you then?
14.
And when did you start your balloon campaign, your no balloon campaign?
November.
Tell us about that.
Balloons have the same effects as plastics. When you release a balloon, it travels thousands of miles away, and then what goes up must come down. So majority of the balloon fragments are scattered around the ocean surface. So once the turtles or fish or the seabirds see it, they do not know the difference between food and the balloon fragments. And they eat it, and it causes the animal to starve, and then it eventually dies. Well, it blocks an animal's gut. I started campaigning on no balloon releasing, and we took it to social media platforms, and I was shocked with all the replies and the comments, also with nasty comments. When I first floated the idea to my parents, they told me to pray about it. One of the things about the campaign is prayers are our pillars. My parents also wanted to protect me from the social media platform because of what people might think of my age and my gender, that I should be in school and studying. But I was determined to raise my voice, although people say negative things about me. And then I started to research about the eco-friendlier alternatives rather than releasing balloons. So that's when our mangrove initiative started. And then we organized a beach cleanup. And I was privileged to be invited by the IUCN Oceania Forum to speak as a eco-champ. It was my first time speaking in a conference in front of people. This New York journey has just started. I'm looking forward to meeting other young activists and also to learn as much as I can, so that when I come back to Fiji, I am more vocal and I'm more determined to lobby for government to relook at the Fiji Litter Act 2008 and to classify balloon releasing as littering, and also champion this climate change fight.
That's Anne-Marie Renduva, who spoke to Christine Ravoy, who's being accompanied by her mum to the UN. The Premier of Solomon Islands' largest province says he will push for independence to maintain ties with Taiwan if there's public backing. Daniel Suidani says the people of Malaita are worried about what an impending diplomatic switch to China will mean for the province. On Monday, Taiwan ended a 36-year relationship with the country after Honiara endorsed a report to recognise China instead. But in Malaita, a people's resolution has been circulating calling for independence. Mr. Suidani told Mackenzie Smith his people are not happy with the diplomatic switch.
The national government is giving its decision now to switch to mainland China, and we can't do anything. But our concern here is because we are the only province holding the majority, the population of Malaita, of Solomon Island rather. So we are so worried about what might happen if they pursue their idea and their belief in that democracy. So, but I remain to keep the people, to control them, to wait and see what's the latest development that can be happen if all Malaitans and others who believe in democracy will continue to push for the rights to remain with Taiwan.
This resolution that's been circulating, it's calling for the granting of independence to Malaita province, and you're saying there that if it were to be independent, it could then recognise Taiwan and stay with Taiwan.
At the moment, that idea of independence for Malaita is yet to be considered, because it has to be something that the whole of Malaita must agree upon. The members, the executive will make sure, will go around and talk to the people in the rural place and everywhere in Malaita province, in these five regions, and we will see there what's their view, because we have been with the Taiwan government as our traditional friend. But still, during that time, even Taiwan helped us a lot. We seems to, you know, the government sometimes, not sometimes, every time, they promise us with major development that doesn't happen. So the people is now starting to get worried when this switch to mainland China has already happened. But then if there is any changes that the national government can do to Malaita people, like can implement some major project, because we are worried so much about, we heard rumors and maybe confirmation that the Chinese government, when they give funding to country, it becomes a loan. So that makes the people of Malaita very frightened about part of that whole thing. But with Taiwan, for the last 20 to 30 years, they help us in giving us money for development through grants. So that is where these people here have seen the help Taiwan has been offering to the people of Malaita and Solomon Islands as a whole, but then don't know how this switch of government to the mainland China happened without consulting the people.
That's the Premier of Malaita and Solomon Islands, Daniel Suidani. Several thousand people on Thursday filled Nuku'alofa's first Wesleyan church to overflowing for the funeral of Akilisi Pohiva. The Tonga Prime Minister died last Thursday in Auckland after being medevaced from Tonga the previous day. A correspondent in Tonga is Kalafi Mawala, who told me that while people knew Mr. Pohiva had been unwell, his death still shocked many.
This death was quite taken with shock and taken with a lot of grief. The people that have supported him and the people that have known him. And the funeral marked a very significant occasion. It was televised so that people from the Northern Islands and all over Tonga was able to listen in to see what was going on in the funeral. The church, which is the Free Wesleyan Church, the main church, was absolutely packed with people. I estimated a little over 3,000 people that were there. Both the side wings of the church were also filled in and overflowed into the grass area. It was a very honored occasion. It was interesting that one of the chief critics of the Prime Minister and his administration even issued a cautioning on social media, in which he was asking everyone to stop any more political discussions or talk in any media, but that everyone would stop and be silent and honor this man. It was a very, very honorable occasion there.
Would you say this was the biggest funeral for a commoner in Tonga?
It would be one of the biggest. I've seen other funerals of other commoners, but the reason why this is big, of course, is not because of the family necessarily, but because every civil servant, every department of government and their staff, and you're looking at almost 4,000 employees. Most of them were required to be there. And so other funerals, of course, are mostly family occasions in which families will come from all over. But this was a very, very official. It was like a state funeral in which there was a lot of very important people. Queen Nanasipau was present, as well as Royal Princess Patuhuipeka and all the nobles that I could work out. They were there, all the ministers and government officials. So, yes, definitely he was one of the biggest.
So, despite Akilisi for many years rubbing many members of the establishment up the wrong way, they clearly still had a lot of respect for him.
They do. They felt that the respect was the fact that he brought some changes, in fact, significant changes to the political arena in Tonga. Even the things that he had criticized, you have to understand that even the establishment, who was a little bit reluctant in speaking out on issues, Paul Hiva himself would speak out on those issues. And so there was a kind of a quiet support, an agreement, yeah, that those issues were very important, particularly in his stance that against corruption, and especially the fact that he felt that we need to move on and be more democratic in our governance, that needs to be a more sharing of power, and all the things he had preached over the years. Yes, there was definitely respect for him. And it was surprising to see also the royal family this year, especially with a lot of attack from Paul Hiva supporters and the royal family and all kinds of stories that they had circulated. And yet the royal family was there in force in support of him. So it shows you something.
That's Kilafi Mwala in Nuku'alofa. To sport, and the Kirindrani family are battling with divided loyalties ahead of this weekend's Rugby World Cup clash between Fiji and Australia. Father Inosi, Sister Bulo, and Brother Samuela travelled from Fiji to Japan to support Wallaby Centre Tevita Kirindrani, who was born in Suva but has gone on to become a senior figure in the Australian team, earning 60 test caps since his debut in 2013. Bulo and Kirindrani told Vinnie Wiley, "They all want Fiji to do well, but on Saturday afternoon in Sapporo, they'll be putting their family first."
It's a bit tough, actually, but, you know, we're here for my brother, so we hope the Wallabies will win this weekend.
And of course, this is not the first time that your brother, Tevita Kirindrani, has played against his homeland of Fiji as well. So what's it like in the family when these sorts of matches come up?
We're excited, because the last World Cup, when my cousin played, Namani, That was a tough one as well, but yeah, that time it was whoever the whatever team wins, but I guess this year we're hoping the Wallabies will win. Yeah.
So you have come over with your family to yes. to how many games are you going to get to watch? Who are you going to go and see?
Well, that depends. We're actually booked for 2 weeks to stay here for the Wales against Wallabies as well. But if the Wallabies go through, then we might just extend our stay. But if not, then we'll go home after that.
And what if Fiji go through?
Well, my dad will probably stay for that one.
Are you both supporting Fiji, though?
Of course. Yeah, of course. I mean, but like I said, you know, there's divided loyalties, yeah.
And, you know, there's a really strong Pacific influence in the Wallabies team, a lot of Samoans especially, but Tevita, a couple of Fijians as well. We see in the All Blacks Sevu Reese as well, so I suppose it's nothing new to see Fijians on the international stage. There's Tokuna Singa in the England team, so there's Fijians everywhere, really.
Exactly, yes. Where I'm from, in Fiji, Namatukulu, we've had a lot of successful rugby players. Lotte Tungiri, we have Non Andruku, so this is nothing new. We've always had, you know, big rugby names, even from my village. Yeah.
And you've obviously just arrived in Japan from Fiji. What is the feeling? Because there's a lot of talk that Fiji can make the quarterfinals this time,
yeah.
That this team, you know, they've done it before, but it hasn't been since, I think, 2007. Mm-hmm. So there's what's the feeling amongst the locals and the fans? Is there confidence?
Oh, yes. There's a very big support back home for the Fiji team. You know, everyone is hoping for Fiji to win. Everyone is even hoping for Fiji to beat the Wallabies this Saturday. So everyone's excited back home. Yeah.
And
rugby is huge back home, so the support is huge. The excitement is even bigger.
But I guess it's always harder in the 15-a-side game, isn't it? Sevens, Fiji
yeah.
reigns supreme, but always harder. Is there is this perhaps the most confident that Fiji have gone into a World Cup, do you think?
Yeah, it is, yeah. We're pretty confident with this team, yeah.
And I guess in order for the Flying Fijians to make mm-hmm. it to the quarterfinals, they have to beat Australia or Wales, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this first game against Australia, aside from the family connections, mm-hmm. is an absolutely massive game for the Flying Fijians.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I hope the Flying Fijians really do make it to the quarters. Of course, we're excited for the team as well. And we're also hoping that the Wallabies will make it to the quarters, so... We just wish them the best, whichever team wins.
That's Bulo and Kirindrani, speaking to Vinnie Wiley. The Kurandrani family is scheduled to stay in Japan for 2 weeks, but Bullo says if the Wallabies make the knockout rounds, they might extend their stay. Well, Father Inosi is also willing to stick around longer if the Flying Fijians progress beyond the pool stage. That is Dateline Pacific from RNZ Pacific. Thank you for joining us. I'm Don Wiseman. Until next time, Nisa Mothi.